Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Water Cooler, everybody. We're glad you're with us. I'm David Brody. It's Friday, March 12, 2021. Let me give it up, first of all, off the top for Joe Biden. All right. I'm being dead serious. President Biden does empathy really well. And that was on display Thursday night during his primetime COVID speech. He's been through a lot, obviously a lot of personal tragedy. And so, as Bill Clinton might say, he's able to feel your pain. So he gets an A for empathy. However, there are two big issues with what he said last night. We're going to have more on that in a moment. Also today, female athletes under attack. Can someone explain to me how it's fair that biological men are allowed to compete against biological females? That's right, I said it. I mean, score one for political incorrectness. I mean, look, folks, transgender athletes are technically biological males. So we're going to get into how Republicans navigate the politics of it all today. And also, hey, will you look at that? Look at AOC right there. Such courage from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Today she finally called on Andrew Cuomo to resign. It only took a huge nursing home scandal, 2 cases of sexual assault, 4 cases of sexual harassment, and months of silence to go by. I believe we sarcastically call that a profile in courage. More later. But first, to President Biden's COVID speech last night. A couple of big issues here. First of all, as I predicted yesterday on this very show, he gave absolutely no mention or credit to the Trump administration when it came to the vaccine plan and rollout. Now, let's remember, Operation Warp Speed was a huge success. Don't take my word for it. Just listen to The Washington Post or CNN's Jake Tapper or Andy Slavitt, a senior advisor for Biden's COVID team. They all give the Trump administration credit. And look, there were 3 vaccines developed due to the work of Operation Warp Speed under Trump's watch. And also, there were already 1 million vaccines or so being distributed into people, or excuse me, administered into people's arms when Biden took office. Instead, not one positive word from Biden about how the Trump administration laid the groundwork. I want you to watch Biden last night. Now, of course, in typical water cooler fashion, we decided to get creative, and we thought, what if Trump watched the speech as well?
2 months ago, this country didn't have nearly enough vaccine supply to vaccinate all or ever near all of the American public. But soon we will. We've been working with vaccine manufacturers, Pfizer, Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, to manufacture and purchase hundreds of millions of doses of these 3 safe, effective vaccines. And now, at the direction and with the assistance of my administration, Johnson & Johnson is working together with a competitor, Merck, to speed up and increase the capacity to manufacture new Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is one shot.
I mean, there you go. Folks, look, Joe Biden consistently talks about unity. You know what it would have been unifying? How about a line like this in the speech last night? I want to thank the Trump administration for their stellar work on Operation Warp Speed. They provided a valuable service to all Americans. That's it. That's all I got to say. Unity in 10 seconds. Instead, crickets. Now, the second issue regarding the speech was this overarching theme that you can trust the federal government. Lines like, listen to Dr. Fauci. Or how about this one?
In the coming weeks, we will issue further guidance on what you can and cannot do once fully vaccinated to lessen the confusion, to keep people safe, and encourage more people to get vaccinated.
All right, so the federal government is going to tell us what we can and cannot do once we're fully vaccinated? I mean, thank you. We really appreciate that, of course. Now, look, Biden cloaks it as just guidance, right? But we know the deal. Liberals think the federal government knows best, especially when it's run by very smart liberals. I mean, we're the kids. they're the mom and dad, or with liberals, maybe it's dad and dad. Anyhow, this is exactly the opposite of what conservative Americans believe. They believe in freedom. They don't believe in an overreaching federal government who essentially tells you to eat your broccoli because it's good for you. Now, in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan summed it up perfectly when it comes to the distrust of the federal government.
The 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
That's exactly right. Alas, though it's President Biden, not Ronald Reagan, running the country. Or is Joe Biden even running the country? Anyhow, that seems like a whole other topic. All right, I want to bring in my first guest. Back with us, Roland Martin, host and managing editor of Roland Martin Unfiltered. Oh, gosh, I see you there. Roland, I know
you had it. How much time do we have?
Oh, my God. Wait, listen, you have 6 minutes and 46 seconds. I know that you had to sit through that mini monologue. Now, I want to know if you need an Alka-Seltzer. And I also want to know if you want to give me your take on Biden's speech last night. 6 minutes and 35 seconds. You got it, Roland.
Here's the first thing I want to know.
Oh, gosh.
Please show me the video evidence of you, David, asking Donald Trump to give any credit to President Barack Obama for handing him a private economy. I'll wait.
What are you talking about? Handing him a private? What are you talking about? That doesn't make any sense. I don't understand the question.
If you understand, Donald Trump spent 4 years saying, I built this economy. It was in tatters when I took over.
Right.
You were handed on a silver platter a great economy. Did Donald Trump ever give any credit? No. So now, all of a sudden, you would like President Biden to give Trump credit?
Hey, Roland,
did
by
you
the way.
Did you ever say, Donald, you need to learn to give credit the people who did stuff before you got here? He never did.
Okay.
So guess what? All President Biden is doing the same thing Trump's doing, just moving along.
Well, first of all, a couple things. You can make an argument for sure that Barack Obama's recovery of the economy was a much different, much slower, much different in terms of the numbers.
That's a lie.
No, that's not. It's not. There's economic numbers.
You can't even make the argument.
Of course you can.
Make the argument.
Of course you can.
I can walk through the numbers. What was the stock market when he took over and when he left?
Oh, so now the Democrats are going to talk about the stock market?
No, wait, it's about the stock market. Wait, hold up. I'm using Trump's standards. How many consecutive months of job growth did we have in America when Obama left office? What was the unemployment rate when Obama left office? All I'm saying is you can't make an argument when you have none. But go right ahead.
No, you go right ahead, because I want to know about Biden's speech. You tell me, because I just want to know.
Here's the deal. First of all, it's so great to have a president, one, who can speak in full sentences and who can actually
Biden
empathize
can speak
with
in
the
full
American
sentences?
People. And
Biden doesn't know where the Pentagon is.
And who doesn't make the speech all about him and how great he is and how amazing he is and how wonderful he is and how me, please credit me. Please credit me. Praise God, we don't have that anymore. But the bottom line is this here. He's the leader. He's going to stand there, and they have actually accelerated. They've actually put in a far better plan to vaccinate people. Thank God those nutcases are no longer there.
Hey, Roland.
And I can actually go get my shot today because we have sped this thing along. Because if Trump and those guys were still there, hell, I probably wouldn't get a vaccine shot until 2022.
Roland, let me go back on the Obama thing. Let's be clear. Trump was not coming in as a unity candidate, right? But Biden was. So Biden had an opportunity to throw an olive branch. But he comes in as a unity candidate. Why was he not at least given some credit where credit is due? Trump was never going to do that. He wasn't a unity guy.
Well, he wasn't a unity guy. Was he not supposed to be the president for everybody?
Yeah.
Was he not? Mm-hmm. Here's the deal.
Yeah, go ahead.
I love how conservatives all of a sudden like, oh, Joe, unity and unity and unity. Man, stop. We just dealt with 4 years of a nutcase who didn't care about anybody who didn't vote for him. So guess what?
You got
unity. He spoke to the American people. He spoke. If you want him to kiss Trump's butt, it ain't going to happen. I'm with Joe on this one. Man, I'm not sitting here mentioning him.
Yeah,
I'm not doing it.
Roland, here's the problem. Democrats love to preach about morality. They do. In other words, they're all over morality.
Whoa.
They do. No, hold on. Let me finish my thought. when it comes to Trump, right, you know, how could you support Trump? The guy's, you know, like you said, nuts so crazy, he's immoral as you can be, and how could you support him? But hold on. He was fighting for what conservatives believe, many Judeo-Christian principle-based conservatives believe, are traditional principles in this country, and then Joe Biden is okay with partial birth abortion. So how in the world?
No. Donald Trump was fighting for what white conservative evangelical
beliefs. That's not true.
No, David, it's true.
David, it is true.
You're talking to the husband of the ordained minister. You're talking to a Christian author. I can tell you right now, the values and the things that black evangelicals, black Christians believe in, far different. Don't even try that one. And here's the other deal.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Republicans have preached a whole lot about morality, but then when faced with it, they excused it. To sit there and see Franklin Graham just excuse Donald Trump and his immoral behavior.
Roland, hold on. That's exactly what Democrats are doing right now on Cuomo. You know, where's Elizabeth Warren? Where is Joe Biden? Where are these people?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. Show me the quote from Biden.
Republicans won't even get rid of the folks.
What about Biden? What about Elizabeth Warren? You're not answering the question.
Hold up. Do you not have a guy who represented Tennessee who forced a woman to get an abortion, lied about it, and they reelected him? Come on, man.
But why are you Roland, you're not answering my question. Where's silence from Biden? Silence from Elizabeth Warren? Finally, AOC today. Kirsten Gillibrand. I can go on. Kamala Harris, for goodness sake. Go ahead. I'll give you the final word.
If it was Republican, they would be defending them because they believe in power. Republicans, here's the deal. Republicans don't believe in removing their folk. They believe in standing with them and just saying, hey, we're going to keep going. David, come on now. Now, if you really want to do the roll call on this one, you're not going to win this argument. You know that. Democrats pushed out Al Franken. Democrats pushed out John Conyers. Who have Republicans pushed out?
You're telling me that the silence on Cuomo has been deafening. I got to run. We'll talk about it.
I'm telling you, I got a thug attorney general in Texas. Republicans haven't said anything about. He's one of the most corrupt AGs in the country, right. Ken Paxton. A lot of silence.
We'll talk about it. Roland Martin, we'll leave it at that. Roland Martin getting the last word on the water cooler. Or do I have the last word? Just kidding. All right. No, I'm not kidding, actually. Back in a moment. Thanks, Roland.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. Boy, I got to cool off after that Roland Martin interview. God bless Roland, as they say in the South, or I don't know, maybe they say it in the Northeast. They say it all over America. All right, let's talk about, here's an interesting topic, transgender athletes. So this just in, if you don't know this, transgender athletes are biologically men. I know. I said it. I said it at the top of the show. I'll say it again. What are you going to do? Jack Dorsey on Twitter? What, are they going to cancel me, censor me? Knock yourself out. But it's true. I mean, it's biological. It's true. Anyhow, I want to talk about that and Republicans and politics and the Equality Act. It's all wrapped up into all of it. And I want to talk with Russ Vogt about it, the former Trump cabinet official, the OMB director, the former OMB director, and the president of the Center for American Restoration. Russ, great to see you, sir.
Thanks for having me back on, David.
Russ, you're really taking a proactive stance there at the Center for American Restoration as it relates to the so-called culture wars, which everybody has been saying for years will go away. They never go away. And so I'm just wondering what's happening specifically as it relates to this kind of hot button issue as it relates to transgender athletes. And there's a lot of legislation out there as well.
The culture wars never go away, David, as you know. And you know, we've had a recent debate right now on the Equality Act, and for the most part, Republicans stood strong on that with only 3 voting for that bill. But one of the things that I've seen in the last several weeks is that about 20 Republican members have signed on to the Fairness for All Act, which purports to try to reach a compromise with the sexual progressive ideology of our culture and those who have concerns with religious liberty, but unfortunately, it doesn't do a good job and concedes too much. And what we found is that not only it does not accord with what human nature is, the reality of what you just said, that men and women are different, but that religious liberty doesn't capture all of civil society. No one should have to live in a society where that does not recognize biological differences in women's sports, mm-hmm. in female-only spaces. So this is privacy, this is fairness, this is security, and we would think it's important that Republicans not begin to compromise on this matter.
Yeah, and this is a letter you sent to Republicans concerned about H.R. 1440, and we'll put that up on the screen. You said it's founded on an untruth about human nature. The bill is based on a sexually progressive ideology that rejects human beings as created as male and female with distinctions that run so deep that no physical or pharmacological interventions can erase them. To affirm this is to embed in our nation's laws, which themselves serve to teach our nation, a lie about who we are as Americans at a most fundamental level. And in there is an interesting word, and you talk specifically about putting that into, you say embed, this is to embed it in our nation's laws. In other words, codifying it into law. And really this has been kind of like the whole ball game here. If you can codify it into law, then you're behind the eight ball from a legal standpoint, I would think.
You are. They're going to codify it into the Civil Rights Act so that anyone who disagrees with the sexual progressive ideology is therefore a bigot, is therefore discriminating against their citizens in this great country. And so one of the challenges that we have is that this bill also then doesn't go forward and try to spell out how it would deal with all of these issues that come up, whether that's women's sports, whether that is female bathrooms. It attempts to do that with regard to adoption agencies, but I think it does it in a convoluted manner. So there's a host of practical issues that arise when a compromise like this is tried to be reached.
Russ, what's your sense of the future here? Do you think Republicans stay strong on this? Are they going to, I know you're pushing to make sure they don't go for a watered down Equality Act, if you will, but there's a lot of pressure in this culture today to hew to the left, because let's be honest, we're a bunch of followers out there. That's what we are, kind of our human nature is to follow and not lead.
Yeah, right now, the focus is on the Senate. There's a filibuster that will protect it right now from the Equality Act being signed into law. But if that filibuster is maintained and the Democrats look for a compromise that could potentially reach 60 votes, then they would look in the direction of the Fairness for All Act. That's what we don't want to happen, and that's one of the reasons we need these 20 Republicans to take their names off of the bill so that this is not a temptation for Democrats looking for a political win and a policy win.
I know it's a little early in the Biden administration. Have you seen anything that concerns you from a budget standpoint in terms of priorities, where they're going, what you think they're going to do as it relates to this issue or maybe the broader cultural landscape? What are you seeing out there, Russ?
Yeah, this administration has done everything they could to be divisive and to take these hot button cultural issues that many in the country want to avoid from the standpoint of those in the center right who have said, look, let's not fight on those. The Biden administration has said we're going to make those our priorities. We're going to send the president out there to try to give moderate speeches in which he looks like he's unifying the country. But if you go one level deep, everything he does is to try to inflame these issues and try to move in a hard left capacity. My old office, the Office of Management and Budget, looks at every decision now from the standpoint of racial equity, not equality, equity. And equity is the attempt to level out the playing field and basically pull people down so that we have an oppressor class that is pulled down and another power class is put up. And that's not the way that this country was founded. And we see that over and over with this new administration.
Yeah. Russ Vogt, really appreciate your time. President of the Center for American Restoration. Really appreciate your time, sir.
Thanks, David.
All right. Doing important work there at the center. Hey, how about AOC today? Before we go, let's put the tweet up. She likes to tweet. Have you heard? She finally, what do you know, came out called for Andrew Cuomo's resignation. I like how she prefaces this after two accounts of sexual assault, four accounts of harassment, the Attorney General's investigation. Oh, by the way, she goes on to talk about the nursing home scandal. I think he should resign. I'm paraphrasing, but that's what she said. And those last two words, must resign, are on there. And Andrew Cuomo, let's be honest, he's not going anywhere at a news conference today. Everybody thought, oh, my goodness, he has a news conference. And AOC just put out that tweet this morning, so maybe he'll resign. Yeah, look, he's from New York. And as I told you yesterday, here's what he thinks. Forget about it. Do you really think Andrew Cuomo, very proud guy, a guy with a chip on his shoulder for sure. He's got some mojo and some attitude. Now we understand there might be a seventh, I say might, but there's reports about a seventh accuser coming forward. And I keep going back to double digits. I mean, finally AOC clocking in with a must resign at the six mark. But where's Elizabeth Warren? Where is Kirsten Gillibrand? Where is Kamala Harris, for goodness sake? If this was Brett Kavanaugh, oh, my bad. That's right. That already happened, didn't it? And where were they on Brett Kavanaugh? They wanted him run out of town and put somewhere on Little House on the Prairie in a rerun with Melissa Gilbert. In this case, with Andrew Cuomo, crickets. At least AOC, finally, with some common sense, after months and months.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to the water cooler, everybody. That COVID economic stimulus bill signed, sealed, delivered, signed by Stevie Wonder, I believe. No, I'm sorry, Joe Biden. I'm getting the musical, the tune confused. But anyhow, it's done. It's a done deal. And you know what that means? A bloated government, by the way. And also, let's put up this JTN headline. JTN, by the way, that's slick for just the news. A lot of hidden taxes. In this bill, and there it is, over $57 billion in hidden taxes lurking. That's a good word. I like that word. Who wrote that? Lurking in Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill. Let's unpack the lurking portion of it, better known as Devil in the Details, with Dave Bratt, Dean of the School of Business at Liberty University. Dave, great to see you, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me on, David.
Dave, there's a lot of devil and a lot of details. What's your take on what we just saw transpire in Congress?
Yeah, well, the $2 trillion is just part of the larger issue of what's going on, the enlargement of the federal government in our lives. And so I saw your last guest host and said the Republicans, want power and the Democrats want to do what's right. In some respects, he's right. The establishment Republicans, right? I was in Congress, and we fought the fight to limit the size of the federal government. And Paul Ryan came in, budget expert, and he did not limit the size of the federal government. So the establishment's true, but he said, which Republicans have gotten pushed out? And I got pushed out by my own team. No money given to me, C committees. I did a PhD in economics. Seems I might have served in some capacity on finance or something like that. And so it's the same old story. The $57 billion is a rounding error in terms of the taxes. But Bernie Sanders said, this is the most consequential bill for the working man the other day. And that's the problem. It's not for the working man. The working man is unemployed right now because of the government fiat. The government is in total control of your lives. The billionaire class is making out well, big tech and et cetera. The Marxists, who used to be opposed to capitalists, are now all in with the capitalists. That's the shocking news, right? The capitalists are the friends of the Marxists, and they're all against the working man. The left used to represent the working man, and now they don't.
Well, Dave, here's the problem. I mean, I agree with you. The problem is in the media spin and other places. I mean, you see $1,400 stimulus checks going out. And, and Betty and Robert, and their kids are home. And all of a sudden, look, a direct deposit for $5,600 with us, the two of them and two kids. And there you go. Yep. I mean, so how do you, I tell you what, they see it as free money. We know it's not free money, but that's the way it's spun.
Yeah, well, that's right. And So, you know, I used to teach economics when we had an economy based on the price system, which means based on, you know, supply and demand and competitive markets. We do not have an economy anymore. It's all federal debt stimulating the economy. It's basically the economy right now is a corpse. It's just laying there, but we're shoving blood through the corpse with $30 trillion in debt. And then the Fed has $7 trillion in funny money, a sugar high, running through the corpse. And so the corpse is still growing at 1% only. Ordinarily, that amount of stimulus would give you massive hyperinflation like you've never seen. So the fact that there's no inflation on the scene tells you all you need to know. We do not have a functioning economy right now. And an economy, the real economy, right, is made up of, you know, capital, human capital, and technology. Those three things cause growth, which we don't have. If you pull that money away, and so that bill is coming due, and we're going to see the true economy resurface once we're done with this silly free money stage, and it's going to be a very sad day. It's going to make 07, 08 look like a field day.
Interesting. Give me your take exactly on all the debt and deficit, all these numbers that we see that keep piling up. What is the implication? What does that mean down the road? Explain. I mean, give us put your Dean University hat on, if you will, and explain what the actual implication of what this actually will mean at some point, because at some point, this is all just going to blow up.
No, that's right. Laws of economics are just like the laws of gravity. They are real. You can fake out the economy in the short run with government policy and tweak it. But in the end, reality comes down, right? We printed too much money in 04, 05. The money had to go somewhere. It went into real estate assets, created a bubble, and kapop. Right now, the more worrisome piece is our productivity. Is shot. You know, how many of our students are studying IT, computer science, engineering, et cetera, in the U.S.? It's in the millions, and I'm not exaggerating. In India and China, they're producing engineers, computer science by the millions. And here, we're all taking crazy studies. That has a dramatic impact on our economy. Productivity is the economy, right? Your GDP growth rate, the growth rate of the real economy, the things you produce, refrigerators, cars, et cetera, is limited by your productivity. And so that's the most problematic part. And Greenspan and Bernanke said after the 07-08, they said, what's the greatest harm from this thing? After the bubble crashed, and they said the greatest harm is the lack of skills that we're losing.
Yeah.
The skill base from the unemployed. And then add now the COVID and what we're doing to the kids and the lack of skill formation for a year or two and the psychological scarring. And that's the real harm that we're going to pay the price in a few years on.
Dave, less than a minute left. The Biden administration believes this $1.9 trillion bill will stimulate the economy. What's the answer to that?
It is spending, right? It is government spending. But the government spending was created by private sector productivity. Mm-hmm. So they're just stealing money from the private sector, giving it back away to people. They're not investing in productivity. People aren't being rewarded for their productivity. And so that's a disincentive to future labor. And that's the beginning of the socialist downward spiral.
Dave Bratt. Love to get your insight. You're like a walking white paper, but you make sense. So thank you.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
Dave Bratt, Dean of School of Business at Liberty University. We love Dave Bratt on this show. Madison, we love Dave Bratt for sure. Yeah, Madison confirming in my ear that we love Dave Bratt. All right, coming next, Timothy Head. Actually, he's really called Tim Head. Only his mother, I'm told, calls him Timothy. He's the executive director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. He wrote a very interesting op-ed about homelessness, mental health, especially during this age of COVID. And it's interesting coming from the Faith and Freedom Coalition, who typically focus on culture war issues. This is a bit different. We're going to explore that in a moment.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. You know, we've talked a lot about COVID-19, obviously, on the show. But one story that gets underreported quite often is COVID-19 when it comes to mental health. And there was an op-ed recently that I want to share with you. It was by our good friend Timothy Head here from Faith and Freedom Coalition. This is what the headline is this: homeless, mentally ill, and behind bars. Tim Head from Faith and Freedom Coalition explores this issue because it really is an underreported story, especially in this age of COVID-19 and all the mental health problems. The homeless not talked about as much as they really should be, especially when it comes to criminal justice reform. So let's bring in Tim Head, Executive Director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition. Tim, always good to see you, sir.
Great to see you too, David.
You know, Tim, you and the folks at Faith and Freedom Coalition, you know, you talk about a lot of pro-family issues, but criminal justice reform is right there on the list. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you say in this op-ed, because it kind of weaves in criminal justice reform, homelessness, and mental health all in one. And I found it fascinating.
I think this piece is a kind of a conflation of a lot of different things that are happening in America right now. We know that that drug abuse and opioid addiction is skyrocketing. Ironically, the justice system, particularly jails, are actually one of the most dangerous places to be in terms of the spread of COVID. And so when we see a heightened level of homelessness and of drug use and drug addiction, with this very delicate and potentially dangerous element of over criminalization, or people putting people in jails and prisons because of things that are not necessarily they're not criminal activity. You know, certainly homelessness is not a criminal activity. I mean, we need to be very, very thoughtful and measured in the way that we immediately kind of resort to just kind of picking people up off of street corners and sticking them into jails.
Yeah. So, Tim, what's kind of the way forward here, or what needs to be thought about regarding the way forward in terms of what can be done here, whether it be criminal justice reform or paying more attention to the homeless when it comes to mental health? What can be done specifically?
Well, historically, listen, jails are actually designed not only in America, but even going back to our roots in Europe, to house people who are engaged in dangerous or criminal elements. You know, we pick them up on the streets, but then put them in jail as they await being held, actually their day on trial. And so really, the use of mental health is really, it's kind of a non sequitur. And so in the 90s, we started doing more on mental health in jails, but really people get no treatment when they're actually being incarcerated. So thankfully, there are a lot of sheriffs and jail administrators across the country that have started taking a more measured approach, maybe having one portion of a jail specifically for homeless and mentally ill. And frankly, a lot of sheriffs have just, in their own impetus, worked with counties and cities to have totally separate facilities that are only for mental health and maybe for jail. For drug rehabilitation. So it ultimately turns into more of a local question. And thankfully, we're starting to find the Department of Justice and Bureau of Prisons recognizing that on the local level across the country, and finding best practices and starting to fund and supplement those best practices on local basis.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the local basis, because I was going to ask you, as it relates to the way forward, is this a state and local issue? What's the role of the federal government in all of this? Because in essence, we are talking about a moral issue here at its basic core.
That's exactly right. And it is I believe that not only is mental health a local function, but also the practices are very customized to the needs of different populations. So, you know, in Central Texas, for instance, and other facility or other communities that are surrounding large military bases, you see a lot of veterans that come home and actually reenter society into local areas, and you'll see kind of an uptick in veterans who are homeless. Well, veteran programming on a local basis needs to be kind of the approach that city or county can use. In that regard, it becomes a very localized scenario, and that's where we just need the feds to be able to recognize and kind of acknowledge local best practices and just help to facilitate that instead of taking a top-down approach and from D.C. then just kind of edicting that you know, everybody has to have veterans programming, everybody has to have opioid programming. We need localized, customized programming for localized, customized challenges that we're experiencing.
You know, Tim, as we wrap up here, the Faith and Freedom Coalition, obviously on the front lines of what some might deem the culture wars. I mean, you're obviously, it's a pro-life, you support pro-life policies, you support, obviously, traditional marriage, you and I go down the line. What's interesting to me when you wrote this op-ed is that I think it goes against the stereotype of liberals who might think, oh, Faith and Freedom Coalition, although they're on the culture war right, if you will, which you're breaking the mold to say, hey, wait a minute. No, we're not. We always hear about womb to tomb, and here we are. I mean, as it relates to pro-life means pro-life for the entire life, and I just think that you're pushing back against that narrative, which I think is something that everybody wants to label certain organizations and people.
Look, there are churches literally from coast to coast across the country that are hosting Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, you know, AA and NA programming on Wednesday nights and Thursday nights and Saturday nights across the country. We've had, soup kitchens and feeding programs, homeless programs in churches and faith-based nonprofits from coast to coast for literally a century. So Christians and people of faith care deeply about these. And on top of that, every one of these people are somebody's child, frequently somebody's mother or father, brother, sister. So there is a human element to this. There definitely is a faith-based element to this. And then from a good governance perspective, again, we believe that there should be faith-based components to these programming, and it needs to be localized. So it shouldn't be prescribed by the federal government, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't certainly exclude faith-based programming, which unfortunately at this point is a real risk coming out of a federal bureaucracy. So instead of us sort of kind of taking an avoidant approach, Faith and Freedom really believes that Christians and people of faith need to be leading on this.
Tim Head, Executive Director of the Faith and Freedom Coalition, always great to see you. Thank you. Great op-ed. Appreciate it. All right, that's Tim Head. And I got to tell you, when it comes to mental illness and COVID, it's something that is crucial in this country that when COVID comes to an end here, we've got to get it under control, mental health, suffering.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. Time for the last sip. I love this segment. Here's a straight up question for you. Are you going to take the vaccine? I want you to, this is what I put up on Twitter, and you can please go ahead and give us your comments if you go to the, or just send us an email at thewatercooler@justthenews.com. Thewatercooler@justthenews.com. And we would love to know what you think. And this is the question. I put it up on Twitter. Will you take the vaccine? And here are some comments. How about this one? I would cut my eyelids off with a rusty razor blade. Yikes. Before I inject myself with an experimental medical treatment developed by a company that has paid over $7 billion in fines in 20 years for fraud, bribery, and racketeering. That's a run-on sentence, by the way. Pharma profits off of sick people continuing to be sick. There you go. Here's another comment off my Twitter feed. I think I am bound ethically to take it. I want to preserve life and not chance it. I'm going to try and take it from my doctor at the hospital in the hopes that it isn't the Johnson & Johnson one, I guess, since the doctor at the hospital should be able to keep it at the required temperature. Here's Joy, who says, no, this virus is blown way out of proportion. Getting the shot could possibly be worse than the virus. It's experimental! Exclamation point. And then Corn. I ain't no lab rat. Let me do that better. Here. I ain't no lab rat. Anyhow, it's in all caps. And then Ed says, already got second Moderna vaccine, had a 36-year-old friend very fit with no health issues, nearly die from COVID. I want to be protected. So there you have it, some sampling of whether or not you would take the vaccine or not. Once again, we would like your comments here at the water cooler, and we'll read some next week. We'll figure out a day to put it on. Once again, the water cooler, oh, look at that. Well, that's so fun. The water cooler at justthenews.com. Will you take the vaccine? Why or why not? Hey, dirty little secret, okay? I'm just letting you know. And I know Joe Biden leans into the camera last night, right, and says, I need you to take the vaccine. We need you to take the vaccine. I mean, he's not talking in a creepy voice like that, but that's what he's doing. Look, I got news for Joe, all right? There are a lot of Americans out there. I don't know how many. I'm not going to put a number on it. There's quite a few that are not going to take the vaccine for exactly those reasons stated in some of the sampling of emails. And look, let's be honest. It's a vaccine that came quickly, so yay for Operation Warp Speed and the Trump administration, but it also came at warp speed. Which means, what's going on exactly with that vaccine? And I know people are going to be like, give me a break. But hey, it's out there. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Water Cooler, everybody. We do cheesy very well here at the Water Cooler, as you have seen probably throughout the show. And if you watch our show. And guess what? Speaking of cheesy, it's time for the cheesy poll of the day graphic.
The Water Cooler. Poll of the day.
All right, let's get to it. Question about COVID. Some states like New York and California impose strict lockdowns to deal with COVID-19. Others like Florida and South Dakota impose fewer restrictions. Which appeal was more successful in dealing with the pandemic? 43% believe strict lockdowns were, actually. Then 31% say fewer restrictions. 17% say it didn't really make any difference. So you can kind of lump that in with the fewer restrictions if you think about it. And 9% say not sure. We'll get back to you. Joe Weber, senior writer with Just the News, joining us now to talk about the poll and a few other things going on at justthenews.com. Joe, what do you got?
Hey. I talked about a little bit about the poll. I think that's interesting in the extent that all politics really is local. Some people, it works in South Dakota, and other people in New York City, not so much. You know, I've said this from the very beginning, this is a federalist society, and you just can't have one government, central government, making decisions for everybody else. So it's divided among 50 states. It works for the better for most of the times, and sometimes it doesn't. But you know, what's not necessarily good for a very densely populated city like Brooklyn and writ large New York is different than something that might be for South Dakota. So I think that these numbers bear that out.
Yeah, you mentioned New York. What do you got on Cuomo? I got about 45 seconds or so. What do you got?
Just listen to the presser. Like you were, right on the mark. He's not going to resign. Anybody who thought that was going to happen today, no. But I would disagree with some the analysis that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez doesn't really mean anything because she's not part of that New York assembly that could have him impeached. I think she's her message or social media game, incredibly powerful. She can force public opinion. I think she can sway with a simple tweet, a couple tweets, the ability to raise money, the ability to get people to look at things in her point of view. She could apply a lot of pressure on these members of the assembly to eventually have to come out like this. I don't think that her power like that should be dismissed.
No, I 100% agree with that. Joe Weber, senior writer, justthenews.com. Thanks and have a great weekend. Appreciate it.
Have a nice weekend.
Yeah, you too. No, he's right. And, when AOC tweets, the press for sure listen. And if the press listens, it becomes a narrative, and Cuomo obviously is going to be looking at that tweet for sure. Where's Kamala Harris? Maybe she's got some serious thinking to do over the weekend. I've got some serious eating to do over the weekend. And now I will see you Monday. Have a great week.